Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, November 23rd, 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr., and joining me is LaCroix Poppy himself, a.k.a. my fellow Forbes 30 under 30, a.k.a. Tim motherfucking Gettys.
Bless, I'm going to be the very best like no one ever was.
I am just noticing your sweatshirt. That's
really
hot.
Cool, isn't it?
If you're an audio listener.
I'm all in, everybody.
He's got all the badges.
Kanto, baby.
He's did all the 8 Kanto gyms.
So here's the thing, Wes. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I asked how I can catch them all and how I can bring back my old cartridges, all right? So many people wrote in. Thank you for everything that you've done, because now I understand everything that I need to do.
What is
to get into? This is the analog pocket.
I didn't know it looked this nice in person.
Oh, dude.
I've only seen pictures. Holy shit.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
That looks incredible.
I just turned it off instead of raising the volume on it. So there we go. Yeah, here we go. Pokemon, the OG, blue version.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Wait, where's
hold
that camera?
Hold it.
Is it this one? This camera shot's incredible. But, yeah, this is my original blue cartridge.
Wow.
From 1998. Can you see that, Kev?
Can you turn the brightness down a little bit on
it? I can't.
Oh, really? I thought I had set sort of control.
You can see here.
He's got 8 badges. All 151 Pokemon, mm-hmm. 64 hours and mm-hmm. 30 minutes in this thing.
Little Timmy, baby.
Wow.
Timmy, gotta love it.
That's awesome.
Also, though, just like for a second, Bless, look at how beautiful this screen looks.
I know, that's what shocked me. It's like the whole console looks incredible, but yeah, the screen looks pristine.
Yeah.
I did not know Pokemon could look that good. That
beautiful
good.
Thing. Beautiful
wow.
thing.
What's the update on Pokemon Violet? Have you gotten further?
Pokemon Violet, I beat the champion. I'm doing good. I am now in the end game stuff.
Okay. What
a goddamn video game,
what
y'all.
Game.
Get out there. Catch some Pokemon. Have some fun. Eat some turkey.
Tim, I'd love to just kick it with you and mm-hmm. talk about turkey, talk about Pokemon, talk about the analog pocket, because goddamn. But we have so much to talk about on this episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily, so let's talk about it. Today's stories include God of War Ragnarok sales, PlayStation says Xbox wants them to be Nintendo, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on youtube.com/kindafunnygames and twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you're wrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, head to kindafunny.com/KFGD to write in with your questions, squad ups, and more. And remember, patreon.com/kindafunny will get you the show ad-free plus a bevy of bonus content. Housekeeping for you, a new Kinda Funny podcast is up right now, and it is worth the dollar.
Oh, yes.
It is me and Roger joining the crew, and we talk Twitter drama, Andy TikTok drama, and the crew goes to Jack in the Box drama. So much drama this episode, and let me tell you, I've surprisingly so, I've only been on Kinda Funny podcast, I feel like a few times, like a handful of times, like maybe single digits, I have no idea, but like, this is one of my favorite episodes, probably because I'm on it, but also probably because there's a lot of good conversation and a lot of like, a good dissection of the chaos that erupted in the Kinda Funny studio yesterday.
We have we've been on a good run with the Kinda Funny podcast. So if you've been missing out, you've been sleeping on the show, I recommend listening to last week's episode and this week's episode.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Because there's an energy that cannot be matched, cannot be explained, and honestly, probably shouldn't be legal.
1,000%. Another piece of housekeeping for you. We are off the rest of the week for Thanksgiving. We'll be back with more Kinda Funny content on Monday. So cherish it. All right, this is the last KHD you're getting this week.
Take it all
Does that
in.
Mean that we're going to have Friday energy today? I think it means we've had Friday energy all week.
All week. And
honest.
On top of that, Bless, like I was saying this before the show started, what a show.
Oh.
We got new stories for days for y'all.
We got so... It's like everybody took a nap on Monday and Tuesday and they woke up and they're like,
oh, shit.
It's the Thanksgiving tomorrow.
It's Wednesday, Friday.
Get all the news out. So we're going to talk
Friday.
About all of it. Wednesday, Friday, baby. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Morgan Lorraine, Frogger Brady, Christopher Rodriguez, the Kind of Funny Destiny 2 PC Clan, Talltree 81, Joseph A. Carlson, 1UP Pest Control, Kerry Palmer, Elliot, Brian Chaney, Trevor Starkey, Super Daddy Kyle, Undertopian, David Mintel.
The Mind Freak.
There you go. Eric Velasquez, Scotty Wyatt, Alex Riedel, Al Tribesman. All right. Jason L., James Davis. I feel like that one was like as quiet as the one I put out.
Well, I can do it louder.
All right, there
like
you
that?
Go. I like that.
No,
I like that.
But Bless, I think what you failed to understand is you didn't make the noise last time. You just went, oh.
Yeah.
No, I did not. Okay, no, first of all, I did not do that awkward laugh you did. I did more of like a grr, like a, like that's what I did.
Honestly, that was a lot better than anything you did yesterday.
Yeah, that was using the dangly thing at the back of my throat.
No, it's you're not. You're not using the dangly thing.
That's 1,000% my uvula.
Your Umbreon?
My Umbreon.
Later, I'm going to get a flashlight. We check this out, all
right? All right. Yeah, we can do an examination. James Davis at James Davis Makes.
Mick Evan going at the Nanobiologist.
Oh, God, no. Mick at the Nanobiologist Abramson. Ryan T. from Tennessee. Derek Gurek. We only do things like that on Kind of Funny Podcast. And then Donald Eccles. Today, we're brought to you by Shady Rays, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 9 news stories today.
A Baker's Dozen!
Holy shit.
Starting with our number one. He sounded like an N64 announcer. Yeah. On like a video game.
With that crackly like.
Yeah, like surprisingly low quality. Story number one. God of War Ragnarok is PlayStation's fastest selling first party game ever. This is Chris Scolian at Video Games Chronicle. Sony has claimed that God of War Ragnarok is the fastest-selling first-party game in PlayStation history. The company announced the record on the official PlayStation Twitter account, claiming that 5.1 million copies had been sold through in its debut week. This makes it the fastest-selling first-party launch for Sony and naturally makes it a franchise record for the God of War series as well. The last time Sony declared a game its fastest-selling at launch was The Last of Us Part II, which it stated was the fastest-selling PS4 exclusive. Sony announced in June 2020 that The Last of Us Part II had sold through more than 4 million copies in its first 3 days. Before that, the record was held by Insomniac's Spider-Man, which was previously the fastest-selling first-party PS4 game with 3.3 million copies sold in its first 3 days. Damn. And before that was the previous God of War title, which only came out, this is me talking, not the article, which only came out months before that Spider-Man game,
yep.
Right? And that sold that launched in April 2018, sold through 3.1 million copies. Tim? They keep doing it.
They keep doing it.
With every new big first-party PlayStation game, they keep killing that record.
Dude, how did we get both Breath of the Wild and Odyssey in 1 year, and then the next year we get God of War and Spider-Man? Like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Right? What a time. What a time.
I remember at that time being, like, in, like, Game of the Year conversations and, like, back and forth. I used to describe it as, like, you know, God of War that year was my Breath of the Wild, where Spider-Man was my Mario Odyssey.
Yeah.
Right? Like, 100%. Spider-Man was that fun game that had the, you know, beautiful locomotion that, like, mm-hmm. was speaking to the inner child in me, whereas God of War was, like, this innovative, like, boundary-pushing game that's, like, a work of art. You know, like, what a magical time that was.
I, like, any other year, those games would have won the Game of the Year, but because of the ones above it, they didn't. It's just like Gabby Windy and Charlie D'Amelio on Dancing with the Stars. Charlie won. She had to win. Gabby should have, though. Any other year, she would have done. That's exactly the point. You know what I'm talking about, Bless?
No.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. So this is insane. Like, these numbers are absolutely wild. 5.1 million copies in 1 week, right? And that's not going to slow down. That's just going to keep on going. It is a sign of so many things. The quality of PlayStation Studios, the quality of Sony Santa Monica, the quality of God of War as a franchise at this moment in time, right? On top of that, it is such a perfect storm of the video game industry absolutely exploding in size, and that mainstream market that we've been talking about since 2020, really, with the Animal Crossing boom of the pandemic and all of that, right? But that's just one side of the story. When you look at PlayStation, how they've been building this, how they've been building their team of studios with their back-to-back-to-back quality releases that we've talked about ad nauseum at this point of what PlayStation has been capable of and has been delivering on. But then you add this other X factor on top of it that is this game's on PS4 and PS5,
yep.
And there are so many tens of millions of these systems out there on PS4 and PS5. There's the people that have the PS5s, and at this point, we're getting up there. I don't remember the last reported number of how many PS5s are there, but like, wasn't it like 50?
We talked about this recently. I don't know if it was 50, but it is. There are a lot out there. PS5 sales.
So when you add that to that PS4 number, it's like, all right, cool. The available potential player base is already enormous.
Sony has sold over 25 million PS5s. 25.
Okay, cool. So still very, very impressive. When you add that to the PlayStation, we're looking at what? 150 plus million potential people to play this game. And when it's as good as it is, and it has a prestige of a title, as much of a must play as it, they delivered. It's not a question of maybe it's going to happen. Like, they did the damn thing. Like, this makes a lot of sense, but it's just so good for the gaming industry. And again, we talk a lot about how everyone's doing their own thing, Nintendo, Xbox, and PlayStation this generation in different ways. And we talk about the value of Game Pass, right? But then you look at PlayStation. Like, there's a value to a $70 title selling this much. That's $70 times 5.1 million.
Yeah.
And that's what it gets you. And game, like, the quality level of God of War Ragnarok.
You take that and you combine it with moves PlayStation's making, right? You mentioned the, oh yeah, let's launch on both PS5 and PS4. This makes that make sense. The fact that, yeah, God of War Ragnarok is another one of, like, this is our fastest selling game now, right? Years from now, we're going to look at this as one of the highest selling PlayStation Studios games at the end of the line, right? This makes that make sense. And if you're somebody that's like, oh man, but it should have been PS5 exclusive because I wanted the graphics, I wanted it to take advantage of the PS5. It's like, come on, like, look at this game. Like, you're telling me this game isn't, like, the best it can be, right? You're telling me, like, the story they're telling, the game mechanics here, the graphics, all that stuff doesn't live up. Like, I understand the idea of, like, I want a reason for my PS5 to, like, be a, I want the reason for my investment for my PS5 to matter. The fact of the matter is, like, I think you're getting that with God of War Ragnarok, with all the bells and whistles, right? With the performance modes, with the extra fidelity that comes with that, right? With the being able to play on the DualSense, right? Things like that, I think, is bringing that value. But yeah, like, I think the decision to put out these first party games on both platforms at the current state, right, I think makes sense. I think it's the right decision. My follow up, actually, before I even get to my follow up question, right? Bring a PC to that too. God of War Ragnarok is going to eventually come to PC,
yeah,
and it's going to sell more copies,
mm-hmm,
right? We're talking about a game right now that is exclusive to the PlayStation platforms and is selling this much. Imagine if they're able to open that up more, right? And they're doing that with PC.
And dude, like, on top of that, so you just said that in a couple of years we'll look back at this as like, oh my God, it sold so much, and it's like, will we? Or is there just going to be more PlayStation Studio titles because they put them out at such a quick clip?
That is my next question. Is when is the next time we see this record broken?
Well, so
do we see a broken Spider-Man 2?
I mean, okay. Hey, there's a lot of factors that come into play here, right? Spider-Man 2, PS5 exclusive. Correct? I think it is.
I'm looking it up right now.
And that is going to change things. But it is a sequel to one of the most popular PlayStation titles.
Yeah, PS5 exclusive.
And there's a lot of people looking forward to it, obviously, right? And they're just going to continue to build this momentum and go, Spider-Man is only going to get bigger as an IP and have more mind share of people. But what's really interesting to me is, again, we're talking about the swell. I went all the way back talking about Animal Crossing. Talk about The Witcher on Netflix, what it did for Steam sales and for just sales of that game when that show came out and was good on Netflix, right? We're about to have Last of Us. We have a God of War show announced, right? We're about to get a Gran Turismo movie and a Twisted Metal show.
And
but like,
Twisted
jokes
Metal.
Aside about that, like, real talk, we expect Last of Us is going to knock it out of the park. I don't think that Sony PlayStation is going to let a God of War show be bad. You know, like, I feel like at worst it's going to be Halo levels, but like at best,
is the Halo show not bad? What's the consensus?
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, depending on who you are, you can make arguments in which way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone can argue that it's a horrible show.
Okay.
It's not, when people talk about like bad video game movies, Halo's not that. Is it the best Halo thing ever? No, but like, it's not, I would say it's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. But God of War, I imagine they're going to like try to treat with reverence as much as possible, because that's the whole point of this. Like, they're not doing these multimedia things as cash grabs. They're doing them as strategic cash grabs.
Yeah.
There's a difference there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it, again, it's not a cash grab. It's a plan to make cash, which is, I think, a very different thing. And
yeah,
something
let's
that
expand
we've,
the IP.
Something that we've seen them do and build to get to this point that God of War Ragnarok comes out and sells 5 million copies in a week, right? It's because of their strategy. It's because of their business. It's because of the quality of the products they've made to tell that story. When that story, if it's matched with quality TV experiences, movie experiences, and just widens the appeal of the properties and characters, oh my God, what games?
I mean,
like, these games are just going to continue to sell.
We're going to talk about Witcher 3 soon, because Witcher 3 is another new story here. But like, yeah, I think you're talking about what could be the Witcher 3 effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of the Witcher Netflix show comes out, and all of a sudden, Witcher 3 on Steam and on stores in general just skyrockets in sales. Cyberpunk 2077 had that had Edgerunners come out, right? The anime that blows up, and all of a sudden, Cyberpunk is seeing so many players come back to the game, mm-hmm, right? Imagine what happens when it is, all right, the Last of Us TV show comes out, and now people are buying glasses. Part 1 on PlayStation 5. All right, cool. Now we're buying Last of Us Part 2, because PlayStation is now probably is going to put that on PS5 as well. I think that's going to keep happening, and I think, yeah, whenever we get that God of War is that a TV show? Is it a movie? I forget which one it is.
That was a show, yeah.
When we get the God of War TV show, that's going to flow back, and I think cause for God of War sales, right? Across PC, across console, all that stuff. And then even Ragnarok is going to, like, all the rising tide raises all ships, I believe is the saying, right? I think it's going to be that thing, right? Where it is that ping pong back and forth of, oh man, I checked out the TV show. Oh man, I love this. Let me go play the game. Oh man, I played the game. I fucking love God of War Ragnarok. I'm going to watch the TV show. That is the synergy that PlayStation is building here. And yeah, I think back to my question of what's the next game to do this. I don't know if there's one on the horizon, no pun intended, the horizon, right? I don't know if we're going to, because what? Yeah, you mentioned Spider-Man 2 is going to be PS5 exclusive, and I assume it's going to stick to that. I don't expect to see a PS4 version of Spider-Man 2, because I think now we're getting to that point of the generation.
Maybe,
you know.
I mean, does that change here?
That change is also the question.
I'm sure
if PlayStation was like, hey, are we able to just get a PS4 version out of Spider-Man 2? I could see them taking it.
I mean, it's
right?
Insomniac as well, right? Like, they've proven that they can make things happen that seem impossible.
And if that's the case...
if Spider-Man 2 is on PS4 as well, easily it's going to outsell Ragnarok, I think.
Like, in the fastest... I don't know.
Spider-Man, bro.
Yeah, but my only thing is that we've gotten a lot of Spider-Man now in, like, rapid succession, right? Between Spider-Man 2018, Spider-Man Miles Morales, remastered PC port laws. Let's not count the remastered PC ports. Spider-Man 2018, Miles Morales going into Spider-Man 2. I feel like that saturation might not cause for the swell of excitement the way that God of War Ragnarok had people waiting.
Dude,
right?
We've been waiting for four years. I have one word from you, bro.
What's that?
Peter Venom. Parker? Venom. Oh, okay. That's all that it is, bro. You get what I'm saying? It's just like, there's just like this sheer, like, factor of just like, oh, well, people are going to want that. People love Black Suit Spider-Man. Like, that is just such marketing. Just, that is the cheapest, easiest shot to just make money. It's just, have the goo. Have that goddamn goo.
And
it's going to change the game. Spider-Man, I think that it works differently than God of War in the sense that, first off, Miles Morales, different enough, smaller story. I think that we're so used to Marvel characters having this, like, check-ins, episodic check-ins, that I don't think we have the same level of burnout with it that we would other game franchises. Like, I think there's more of an expectation that we can get more stories, and it feels like it's additive as opposed to, like, oh, man, we're getting a lot of this. You know, like, by the time we get Spider-Man 2, at the end of next year?
Fingers crossed.
I don't know.
It has to happen,
it's like,
right?
Yeah, but even then, it's like, I know I am, but there are millions of people out there that are going to be so ready for a Spider-Man 2 at that point, right? So I think that Spider-Man 2, if it's on PS4, easily will outsell this. If it's not on PS4,
way less of a chance.
I think it's still possible, because we are talking about, right now, fastest selling doesn't mean most selling.
For sure. So, and if we're talking about most selling at the end of the day, I'm right there with you. I think most selling at the end of the day, I think Spider-Man 2 will probably outsell God of War, Ragnarok.
You know what? I take it all back. Spider-Man 2 is going to be the fastest selling game in a week. Yeah, just thinking it through. It's just like, because it's not about the PS4s. It's about how many PS5s are out there. By then, there will be enough even that, like, the percentage of the player base that's going to be so excited and want to get Spider-Man 2 day one, yeah, it's going to be more than 5 million.
All right, we'll have to wait and see. For now, let's continue talking about PlayStation Studios. Story number two, we got a new poster for HBO's The Last of Us. Kevin, if you're able to bring it up for the people to see, this is tweeted out today at The Last of Us HBO on Twitter. Pedro Pascal is Joel, Bella Ramsey is Ellie. Hashtag The Last of Us premieres January 15th on HBO Max. And look at this poster, man. Look at this poster. I have one critique.
Go for it.
Why is Joel in the front and bigger? Right, that was a big conversation around the Kevin's on it, right? That was the original conversation around the original Last of Us cover art, is the fact that, like, Naughty Dog wanted to fight to have Ellie to be in the front, right? Because they saw this as like an Ellie story, right? And they wanted focus on that character. They didn't want that character to be faded in the background. I don't know if I don't like Joel being in the front here.
Yeah, I mean, there is a reason though that's different than the game here.
It's Pedro Pascal.
It's Pedro Pascal.
I understand that.
Right. The world's about to learn about Bella Ramsey though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, I can't wait for the show.
Yeah, I know.
I can't wait for the show.
Dude, it's so close. January.
Yeah. 15th.
Dude, I mean, 2 months. In less than 2 months, we're going to see the show, man. Oh, I can't wait.
I cannot wait. Speaking of PlayStation.
You joining us on that screencast for us?
Oh, my God, yeah. 1,000%.
Let's go.
Is that going to be week to week?
It's every Sunday, week to week, nine episodes.
Let's go.
Yeah, so we'll record screencasts on Mondays.
When does HBO usually put stuff on HBO Max?
6 p.m., baby.
Fuck yes. All right, I'm in. I'm in. Story number three. Sony claims that Microsoft's true strategy is to make PlayStation like Nintendo. This is Andy Robinson at Video Games Chronicle. Sony is claiming that Microsoft's true strategy behind its proposed acquisition of Activision Blizzard is to have PlayStation, quote, become like Nintendo and not compete in the 18-rated shooter space. The comments were made in a newly published response to UK regulator to UK regulator, the Competition and Markets Authority's decision to expand its investigation into the proposed acquisition. In its 22-page response, Sony Interactive Entertainment alleges that if the deal were to go through, users would leave PlayStation's ecosystem, Microsoft could raise Xbox's prices, and independent developers would be harmed in the fallout. As has been the trend with the regulatory back and forth, much of the document focuses on Call of Duty and the perceived harm Sony claims the Activision Blizzard deal would cause should the flagship franchise be made exclusive to Xbox. In one section of its statement, the platform holder singles out comments made by Microsoft that other platforms have prospered without Call of Duty, including Nintendo Switch. In its latest response, Sony says this claim ignores the facts. SIE argues that Nintendo's strategy is differentiated from PlayStation and Xbox because it doesn't rely on 18-rated shooter franchises, games which it argues Microsoft will have virtual exclusive ownership of should the Activision deal be approved by global regulators. In this sense, it alleges Microsoft's true strategy with the Activision Blizzard deal is to make PlayStation like Nintendo, in that it does not compete in this space. Quote, Microsoft claims that Nintendo's differentiated model demonstrates that PlayStation doesn't need Call of Duty to compete effectively. But this reveals Microsoft's true strategy, SIE's statement reads. It continues, Microsoft wants PlayStation to become like Nintendo, so that would be less close in effect. Yeah, it would be a less close and effective competitor to Xbox. Post-transaction, Xbox would become the one-stop shop for all the best-selling shooter franchises on console, Call of Duty, Halo, Gears of War, Doom, Overwatch, as the decision explains, and it would then be free from serious competitive pressure, end quote. This is what I'll say. They're really ignoring the fact that they own Bungie over here.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm Bungie and I'm reading this, I'm like, yo, what the fuck?
What the fuck, man?
Like, you own us. Like, come on, bro.
Dude, also, Nintendo out here just catching strays. Like, Miyamoto's just like, bro.
Strays on PlayStation.
Like, what's up?
Strays on PlayStation.
Oh, hey. Game of the year, everybody.
Wednesday, Friday.
But, yeah, Nintendo's just like out there like, whoa. Like, we're just... Why are you talking to bro? What the fuck are we doing?
We're not even trying to remove us from this narrative.
Yeah, remove us from the narrative.
Hamilton.
Dude, real talk, like, this is, again, the 18th time I'm going to say this, but, like, we're making a much to-do about nothing when it comes to these headlines. Of course they're saying this. They're saying these things back and forth to have statements to build their case because it's business,
yeah.
And they have to. And, yeah, is this headline
ridiculous?
That Microsoft's true strategies to make PlayStation like Nintendo? Oh, my God. What a dumbass fucking nothing. Mm-hmm. That is so funny, and we can laugh about it and joke about it, and we're going to it's silly.
It's a statement that should be a private statement that is being turned into a public statement because mm-hmm. these are public documents for us to look at, right? These are statements that they are making to defend, to, like, try and fight for Call of Duty. It seems messy, and it is messy, but... If PlayStation could choose, they wouldn't choose for anybody to see this.
This
should be between Microsoft, PlayStation, 100%. And a judge.
And then meanwhile, there's just fanboys everywhere using this as ammo in their war. This like, endless war that's just going to result in nothing.
Like, I'll tell you right now, PlayStation understands that what they're saying here, PR-wise, is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
It's fucking crazy shit. But they're saying it because they kind of have to say
strategic.
It. It's strategic.
Even bringing up Nintendo into the conversation is, like, explaining the, look, hey, well, there's... A lot of competitors. No, we're not a monopoly. We're not even close. No, not us. Not PlayStation.
Now, here's what I'll say, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sony claims Microsoft's true strategy is to make PlayStation like Nintendo. Is that Microsoft's strategy or is that PlayStation's strategy? Because that's how I've been describing PlayStation for the last couple of years, looking at how they operate, looking at how they move. The reason why you buy a PlayStation nowadays is to play PlayStation first-party titles. I am buying a PlayStation to play God of War, to play Spider-Man, to play Uncharted, to play Horizon, right? To play the games that are PlayStation games. PlayStation strategy revolves around that first party, but then also what that strategy is now turning into is proliferating that handful of IPs, right? We want more Uncharted. And you're getting the Uncharted movie to support Uncharted, right? You're getting a Horizon show. You're getting Horizon VR. You're getting a Horizon game. You're getting a Horizon multiplayer game. You're probably going to get a Horizon mobile game at some point. All to support this one IP of Horizon, right? That is kind of one for one. Or it's close to how Nintendo operates in the idea of we have Mario, we have Zelda, we have Kirby. You're going to get a lot of Mario, Zelda, and Kirby. That means you're going to get 3D Mario, you're going to get 2D Mario, you're going to get Mario Kart, you're going to get Mario Party. You're going to get Kirby Forgotten Land. You're going to get Kirby in the 10
Kirby
Party
and
Games.
Kirby the Starfuckers.
Kirby and the Starfuckers. Kirby and the Crystal Shards, the N64 game. We're going to give you hella Kirby, right? we're buying this box to play these specific games, right? The Microsoft strategy for the last generation, I think, has always been, I was going to say more bars and more places. It's kind of like Verizon. But, like, more places for people to get into our ecosystem, right? Put Game Pass on PC. Put Game Pass on Samsung smart TVs. Like, where? How do we get you into our space? Not just for our first-party games, but for what we're offering in terms of services, Game Pass, smart delivery, all that stuff. I feel like Sony kind of views themselves, or is starting to view themselves, more in the Nintendo space as opposed to the Microsoft space. That's the argument that I'll make.
It's interesting. I don't know that I agree, because I think that, like I've said a bazillion times since 2019, all three of them are just doing something different. They're in their own lanes, and I feel like with PlayStation, they're continuing to do what they've built up since the beginning of the PS4 generation, which is, I would say, an equal focus on their PlayStation Studios, Nintendo-like titles, for the argument you just made. Totally agree with you there. But I do think that all of their exclusive deals, the way they've tripled down on the Call of Duty stuff and all the multiplayer shooters, the third-party sides of games, like, I think that PlayStation has been really smart about how they associate with third parties to make people still think, oh, I play that on PS5. I play Assassin's Creed on PS5. I play Call of Duty on PS5. And I feel like PS5, PlayStation is just like the game console, the default game console in people's minds for the majority of people, the majority of the normies, for sure, right? I feel like the other people are, if you're getting Nintendo or you're getting Xbox, I feel like you're a bit more, you know exactly what you're trying to get. You know what you're getting into. And I think Xbox is making a wise call in their way of making the barrier to entry so low that if people are interested and can't get a PS5 for whatever reason, they're there, and one day they're going to have the games. You know what I mean? With the Game Pass and all
one
that
day.
Stuff. One day they will, but real time, I mean, they will at some point. But with PlayStation, I feel like they have it. That they don't need to have the one day, because they've been having their day, and they're just having new days, and they're great days.
Yeah.
But they still have
all the Awesome Creed.
Exactly. They still have their third-party titles, though. Like, I feel like, and I mean, that's what's at risk here.
And that totally makes sense, right? And yeah, for sure, a lot of it is like them being different companies and them all operating differently. And Sony, I think, is funny enough, kind of in that middle place, right? If we're talking about a spectrum, I think like Nintendo's all the way to the left. Microsoft's all the way to the right, and Sony right now is kind of in that in-between space of having that third-party support and like being a place where everybody does come to play your Call of Duties and your Horizons, right? I'm curious to see, like if Call of Duty, if and when, honestly, Call of Duty gets stripped away from PlayStation, and once you see a lot of those big third-party games, like you've seen Bethesda gone, right? Like, I think that might continue to happen. Who knows what's going to happen to Ubisoft, Square, all these other companies. Once those start to get stripped away and PlayStation is mainly left with, all right, the premier games here are truly the PlayStation games, I wonder what that does to the company. And I wonder if that's like, I mean, you know, the PlayStation's here making the claim of Xbox is turning us into Nintendo, or Xbox wants to turn us into Nintendo as a bad thing. Nintendo's also a very profitable company that makes a lot of money.
And I mean, dude, look at it on a game-by-game, sale-by-sale basis, right? Like, we just talked about 5 million sales 1 week of God of War.
Mm-hmm.
That's Nintendo shit. Right, like that's when you look at Nintendo games, when you look at the NPD, the top 10 of the year and all that, Nintendo games keep selling forever, just like God of War and Spider-Man and Last of Us are going to do as well. When we check in year to year to year on PlayStation, we're going to get updates, and they're going to be massive, because these games are going to sell massive numbers, because the quality is there, the brand is there, the identity of what PlayStation is there, and people are going to continue to invest in it because PlayStation's investing in it, right? Can Xbox own that from the third-party perspective if they make them first parties? I don't know. It still feels like we're years out from that. Like, it's wild that we're continuously talking about Xbox in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, speaking of massive numbers, can you get us to massive numbers on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can go, you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Shout out to Shady Rays for sponsoring this episode. Look how cool I look. You too can look this cool without breaking the bank this holiday season. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company that gives you the features of $200 shades for a fraction of the price, and a fraction of that price during their biggest Black Friday sale ever. The best part about Shady Rays is their insane protection program featuring lost and broken replacements. If you lose or break your shades on day one, they told us that they will send you a brand new pair, no questions asked. Dropped in the lake, off a cliff, anything. If you get the wrong style for yourself or someone else, no need to worry. Avoid the hassle and the forced thank yous with free 30-day exchanges and returns. You will either love the shades or Shady Rays will pay to ship them back. Act now for the best Black Friday selection. Redeem only at ShadyRays.com, where you can find all their newest and best shades. Redeem only at ShadyRays.com, where you can find all their newest and best shades.
Story number four, let's talk about The Witcher 3. We finally got details on Witcher 3's next-gen version. This is Ryan Dinsdale at IGN. Kevin, I have a link to the trailer in the doc. You can just play the trailer as I'm reading through. CD Projekt Red has finally shared gameplay footage of The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt's PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series versions. Also revealing you don't have to play it with sound. Also revealing every upgrade coming to the next-gen version of the 2015 RPG. Revealed during a CD Projekt Red Twitch livestream, a handful of developers outlined the upgraded visuals, brand new quests, cross-regression, and more that's coming to The Witcher 3 when the update is released on December 14th. CD Projekt Red confirmed that graphic settings will be added to the console, letting players choose between 30 frames per second with ray tracing or 60 frames per second without. This will be available on all next-gen consoles, including the Xbox Series S. The DLC based on the Witcher Netflix series has also been expanded into its own quest, which rewards the player with the previously announced armor based on Henry Cavill's version of Geralt. An alternative outfit has also been added for Dandelion, making him look like the Netflix's series Jaskier. CD Projekt Red has also announced that cross-regression is coming to The Witcher 3 next-gen version, meaning players will be able to share their save between PS5, Xbox Series, and PC. Haptic feedback has also been added to the PS5 version, and other quality of life improvements include changes to the map and a more dynamic mini-map. Some minor accessibility features have been added too, including the ability to change the left stick to auto sprint instead of it being a face button prompt, and more subtitle settings. CD Projekt Red has also addressed a number of quest bugs and performance issues alongside improving various models of foliage and other background features. For PC, the next-gen update adds ray tracing alongside more extensive customization options and a new photo mode. A new camera angle is also being added for more dramatic and cinematic gameplay. And Tim, when I tell you that The Witcher 3 already had incredible lighting, I cannot wait to see what the Rayman tracing looks like in this thing.
Dude, congrats, bless. You get everything you wanted. We were talking about this a couple days ago. You're yep. like, yo, I'm going back in. You've been saying things, and you've been committing to them. You know, you're like, I'm itching for Neo. I see you playing Neo. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I want Witcher. Just hopefully give me my saves. They're giving you your saves. You're about to get in here, man. I'm excited for you.
Yeah, I tweeted out. I'm thinking I'm back, right? And like, we've been talking a lot about me and Greg mainly been talking about if we're going to get back into The Witcher 3. And honestly, cross save is the thing that I think is going to be the key element, because not only is it I assume is how it's going to work, right? I can bring my PS4 save to my PS5. Not only is it going to be that, but it seems like you can move between PS5, PC, and Xbox. And Tim, I'm one of those deck boys.
Oh yeah.
The idea that I can boot up my save that I had from The Witcher 3 and play that save on my Steam Deck while I'm chilling in bed, or on a plane, or at the game, maybe not by the Game Awards, because that is happens after, but like,
yeah, don't play with your deck at the Game Awards.
Yeah, I shouldn't play with my deck at the Game Awards, but like, this is awesome. Like, I'm so excited about this. And yeah, like, I'm excited for this game to look better. I'm excited about the gameplay improvements they're talking about. They also mentioned combat improvements. They're doing the damn thing.
They are.
Good on CD Projekt Red.
I mean, yeah, man. CD Projekt Red doing everything they can. Yeah. Good for them. It's great. It's like really great. This is how you do it.
Like the apology tour of like, we're sorry for what happened with PC, with the Cyberpunk launch. Here's fucking all this shit. Yeah. It's free. It's free. Trust us. Like, just play
it's free.
It's free. Please just play it.
That's great. Like, honestly, I'm very excited. It looks fantastic.
Hell yeah. Story number five. Netflix appears to be developing a AAA PC shooter. This is Ryan Dinsdale at IGN. Netflix appears to be developing a AAA PC shooter at its new Los Angeles studio led by former Overwatch producer and Blizzard vice president Chaco Sonny. As reported by MobileGamer.biz, the aptly named Netflix Game Studio is looking for a game director with experience in shooters to work on a brand new AAA PC game. Akin to Overwatch, it'll seemingly be a live service game, as Netflix asks for extensive experience in this department. In a similar vein, the candidate must have a, quote, deep understanding of highly engaging content and how to deliver it, and be deeply passionate about social systems and gameplay, both cooperative and competitive, end quote. The job listing also demands the future director develop a world, characters, and narrative, quote, that are worthy of a Netflix film or TV series, and build the game within Unreal Engine. The job listing doesn't give too much else away, other than that Netflix is seeking someone with at least 10 years of game design experience, including time spent as a director. as this appears to be the initial hiring wave of a brand new studio. However, it will likely be years before we find out more on what Netflix's AAA game is.
Truly fascinating.
Very
right?
interesting.
Working the other way of everything we're saying, where they're like, look, we have the distribution platform. We have a marketing arm that is essentially free because it's ours. So if they make a show to coincide with a game, they market each other. So it's like if Netflix just promotes the hell out of a prestige Netflix show, whatever that means these days.
The next Stranger Things.
Or even not, I mean, they'd hope for a Stranger Things. But even if it was like something that like, I mean, The Witcher is weird because The Witcher is based on books. It's not based on the game. And like, there's
that'd be a wild if there was like another Witcher that's like the Netflix's Witcher game.
Yeah, I mean, like exactly. But it's like the thing is like Netflix can just find another book series or something, adapt that to be a game and a show.
What's the thing that people Sandman? Is that what it's called? Sandman?
Sandman's a graphic novel that Netflix has a show.
And I watched the first episode, and that shit looks incredible.
I imagine that they would want it to be a bit more. Like they own it to some extent, right?
Sense.
But it is interesting. What will this turn into? I don't know. This kind of gives me the same vibes, less of the That's No Moon company, right?
Yeah.
Of where I'm like, oh, I believe they're actually going to put a game out at some point, versus the Jade Raymond's going to Stadia and she's doing something, and oh, no, she's not, that type of stuff. This feels more like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
Yeah, like it's very interesting to see them trying to break out of what they've already established as what Netflix Games is going to be, because for what Netflix Games is right now, I think it makes a lot of sense. Hey, we have casual games that you can play for I would say for free, but I guess with a Netflix subscription on mobile. You can play Exploding Kittens, you can play Immortality, which is actually pretty wild. You can play a handful of games on Netflix Games, and all of it is working off of your phone. That, I think, makes sense, especially when you're talking about the casual audience that would get into it. When we're talking about the how many people have Netflix in their homes, when you're talking about like the example that I always give, which is my nephew loves playing just these like whack Android games on his like Roku or Amazon Fire TV, right? And it, like the games that I've never heard of, just like random like Trials Fusion looking things, but way jankier. Like he plays that stuff on his TV. If Netflix is able to take that and go, hey, people have Netflix subscriptions, people have kids, let's give them more reasons to keep this subscription by, you know, speaking to their whole family, by giving them games to play. Yeah, like that's another additive feature. Them doing a AAA shooter and having somebody, the former Overwatch producer and Blizzard vice president, being part of this, like, yeah, it strikes me as the Jade Raymond thing to Stadia. But also, you know, at the very least, like, Netflix seems to have a good footing on like what their current thing is currently, and this feels like you're building on top of it. Now they're building on it in a way that's like, oh shit, a AAA shooter? How is that? That's not going to be mobile, right? That's going to be, maybe it could be mobile.
That's the thing, man. There's so many options out there. Them saying AAA isn't interesting. Like, what does that mean? But I guess like there aren't like you'd call Call of Duty Mobile a AAA game.
Yeah.
So,
and granted, like this thing says specifically AAA PC shooter, which is why, you know, we're thinking PC, but. What if it is? Yeah, like if Netflix could have their own mobile game that could also have a PC version of it, and it is a Call of Duty mobile situation or a Fortnite situation, actually isn't a really, I mean, that's not a bad idea.
But the other thing to keep in mind is Netflix games doesn't need to actually be Netflix. It could just be they made a game and now they're gonna make money off of it and their show. You know what I'm saying? It's like that's the kind of the beauty and power of IP and being able to have it multimedia and across different different mediums themselves. Yeah. But
I mean, it's the reverse of what we're talking about with PlayStation,
yeah,
right? Where it's like, cool, we're going to get a Last of Us TV show because PlayStation wants to continue to push that IP of The Last of Us, right? That was an excellent game. This is Netflix going, hey, what if we have a show? Or like, what if you want to greenlight the new next big Netflix show and want to push that further with a video game? I think it could work. I'm trepidatious at the same time, right? Like, cautiously optimistic, but yeah, I'm very curious to see where this goes.
I mean, and like, I'm just looking up like Netflix game studios to see like if there's more info on it. And like the last couple months, really, there's so many news stories and things popping up of like Netflix adds sixth gaming studio with acquisition of Spry Fox. This was 2 weeks ago.
Wait, did you say Spy Fox?
Spry Fox.
Oh, okay.
Not Spy Fox.
I got really excited all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I was like, oh shit, are we about to get more Spy Fox?
The Spy Fox TV show, dude. Spy Fox Cinematic Universe.
I'd watch the hell out of that. Story number six. Riot Games could bring Valorant to consoles. This is Grant Taylor Hill at Insider Gaming. Valorant dropped as a PC exclusive shooter in 2020, and it quickly rose up the ranks of success. As a platform built to accommodate esports, Valorant became one of the most popular competitive games to emerge in recent years. And now it seems as though Riot Games seeks to take the ecosystem one step further by bringing the games to consoles. Recently, it was discovered that Riot Games had posted advertisements for two key job vacancies, one for a senior designer and the other for a design manager. However, both in the title and in the body of the listings, it was stated that these roles would be focused specifically on console-based platforms. In the required qualifications portion of the breakdown, it was requested that the applicants have a robust understanding of console FPS market, shipped or worked on at least one console-based AAA plus online competitive game, and experience developing on multiple platforms, PC, mobile, and console. With that last line, we step into the realm of mobile gaming. It was confirmed a while ago that Riot Games absolutely plan to introduce Valorant mobile product at some point, but there's no further news on the topic. Also very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Riot is in such an interesting position because of a lot of the things we've been talking about this whole episode where they've already kind of done the thing, right?
Yeah.
What Riot doesn't have right now is a foothold in the core gamer console market. Right? Mm-hmm. They have now the Netflix appeal of things like Arcane. They clearly have esports down to a T. They own that shit.
They own that.
They are esports, right?
Yeah.
They are. When you think of esports, when you think of people wearing jerseys like you're wearing, you're thinking about Riot, right? Mm-hmm. You're thinking about League. You're thinking about Worlds. You're thinking about, like, they kind of made the template in a lot of ways, or took the template that others made before them and kind of took it to a whole other level that is now the new standard. Then you look over at the different games that they've kind of made out of their universe, and to go from having their MOBAs to then having Valorant, which is a Counter-Strike competitor, and it's like, it is now the one,
yeah,
right? So that's a completely different game. We have the fighting game, Project L, right, that they're working on. You start to see, like, all right, man, they're really owning the different verticals of esports. And that is something that's really hard to translate to the console side. Even going back generations, Counter-Strike being arguably, like, the most important and influential online game to start it all off, right? Like Counter-Strike is like the Super Mario Brothers 1. Of PC shooters, right? And of multiplayer shooters. And it never made it on consoles.
Mm-hmm.
It was released on consoles. It was released on Xbox, the original Xbox. Global Offensive came out on everything. And it just did not hit in the way that a Halo or specifically a Call of Duty did. And it's even interesting to look at Call of Duty when Call of Duty 1 came out. Not even Modern Warfare. Call of Duty 1 on PC was huge. Call of Duty was huge even before Modern Warfare. Modern Warfare made it a household console gamer title, right?
Yeah.
That totally changed the game. Riot doesn't have that yet. And I wonder if they ever will. But to get there, I think it's the baby steps of getting their games on the consoles, getting people familiar, and then what is that breakout hit going to be? Do you see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. And I don't know if it's going to be Valorant, just because Valorant, I think, is such a PC shooter, right? It's such a technical, you know, mouse and keyboard. I can't imagine, if it comes to console, it can't be, I don't think it can be crossplay. Right, like, how are you going to compete on a controller versus people on PC? Unless it is, we expect you to hook up your mouse and keyboard to this thing. That's kind of where I get worried about Valorant coming to consoles. That said, I have been expecting Project L to be that for them. I think Project L makes a lot of sense to bring to consoles. Right, fighting games work great on consoles.
Mm-hmm.
The Better. Fighting game fan base are on console.
Yeah.
Right, like that. I think is a thing that you could do, and, you know, to bring it back to who Riot is currently in the space. Right, like Riot is maybe one of the only studios that is not made a fighting game that can come out and say, we're going to make a fighting game. And I'm like, cool, you're going to make a great fighting game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you guys are going to nail it because you're Riot. They're one of the only people that can do that.
And it's because they understand the esports element of
exactly.
it. And that's not just the flashy presentation on that. It's the level of competition. It's treating the video game like a sport from the get-go. Not just from the we can sell tickets and stuff, but how the game is played, how the game is presented, the game itself, how it's presented, the UI of it, the game modes, the way that they feature certain things over others. It's like competition is the point of it.
Yeah, and here's one thing I'll point out, right? This article talks about how, you know, Riot Games is bringing Valorant to consoles, and they're using this job post as the reasoning. What if it isn't Valorant, right? Like, there's nowhere here does it specifically say Valorant. It is mainly saying first-person console-based AAA shooters, right? Which, when you think about Riot, you automatically go to Valorant. But what if it is, like, either a Valorant console version or, like, a spin-off of Valorant or just a different first-person shooter that is console-based? I think that could make almost more sense than to bring Valorant to consoles.
I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying about the Counter-Strike thing, where it's like just putting Counter-Strike on consoles didn't work because that's not where that player base is because of everything you're talking about, the mouse and keyboard, just the style of game, like all that stuff. And it didn't work with Global Offensive either when it came out on, that must have been Xbox One and PS4. Correct me if I'm wrong and you're wrong. But there is the option that, and because Riot's huge, we know they're working on a ton of projects. What if they did something that was still competitive and still like, what if they did more of an Overwatch? That's what I'm getting at. Right, mm-hmm. Where there's definitely the esports angle of Overwatch, but Overwatch is also just fun to play, like
and Overwatch
friendly
on
competitively, and it works on consoles. What if they took the world in the same way that we just saw with Arcane, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like you can take this thing that is like a very specific audience, MOBAs, League, right, and make it a little bit more tolerable, not a little, a lot more tolerable to anybody. And I feel like they can do that because they have a world to play with that people already love, and there's lore there, and that's how you get people in, man.
That's how you get people in. Story number 7, Sakurai seemingly teases Kid Icarus Uprising for the Switch. This is Jason Fanelli at GameSpot. Budding YouTube star and occasional game developer Masahiro Sakurai has posted another insightful video to his channel, which focuses on the difficulty system in 2012's Kid Icarus Uprising for the 3DS, but not without throwing in a potential hint regarding the game's feature at the end. After explaining his thought process behind Uprising's difficulty feature, which is called the Fiend's Cauldron, hence the name of the video, Sakurai signs off with the following, quote, "It sure would be nice to play Kid Icarus Uprising on a home console. I wonder if someone will ever port it," end quote. This is not the first time a port of the 3DS exclusive Uprising has been mentioned, as back in July, a prominent online source of Nintendo-related leaks named Zippo claimed that a Nintendo Switch remaster was in development at Bandai Namco, and that it would feature a, quote, "more accessible control scheme, as well as a much-needed boost to the graphics," end quote.
Oh my God.
Is this a tease, or is this Sakurai speaking this into existence?
I think it's Sakurai speaking it into existence. Sakurai, my dude. I love him. I love these videos. They're so good. And I just love the energy that he brings to the games industry. I love the reverence he has for video game history, for his own games and otherwise. There's something special about Sakurai games. And whether it's Kirby's Air Ride, any of the Smash Brothers, or Kid Icarus here. Did you play this one?
No, I did not.
And that is a damn shame because it was stuck on the 3DS. The control scheme was absolute garbage because of the console, not because of the game. It would be good if you just had another analog stick. Eventually, they added that horrible adapter so that gave you another analog stick on the 3DS. That was fine, but like it was a Band-Aid, not a solution. This game was so good. The polish was there. The story was there. The characters were awesome. The music was so fun. It is a blessing-ass game. Like, you are going to love this game when you play it. I guarantee it.
Okay.
100%. But it's trapped. It's trapped on the 3DS, and we're in this place right now where 2022, we look at all the different hardware developers out there, the whether it's Nintendo, Xbox, or PlayStation. We talk about backwards compatibility a lot. We see things, whether it's the online functions or Game Pass or just ways to be able to play old games, whether it's Xbox enhancing old things, PlayStation adding its PlayStation Plus. So many options to play these old games. Nintendo continues to just have so many games that are just trapped in places that, with no sign of them ever actually making the transition. Where, you know, NES, SNES, N64, all that, it's like, cool, we got them now. GameCube, I'm shocked we don't have yet, but like at some point we will. But then you look at the DS, Game Boy Advance, there's ways to play some of those games. Not all of them, whatever. Mm-hmm. DS gets weird because Nintendo got weird in the mid-2000s, right? We have to deal with two screens. How do you translate that to the Switch? How do you translate that to just a single screen experience? Can you? You know, like there's so many like weird elements that I can imagine Nintendo at some point just being like, we're not dealing with this.
Yeah.
Like, figure it out. And that sucks. And that is a very Nintendo way to handle these things. But I hope that we get this. There's so many DS and 3DS games that I'd love to be able to play again. I mean, like Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver. Like, I hate that game is locked to a cartridge. That's one of the most expensive. If you want to play the best Pokemon game of all time, Heart Gold and Soul Silver, right now, you're not going to be able to without having a 3DS or DS, whatever, and buying one of these things on eBay for, correct me if I'm wrong, minimum $90.
God,
And that's the only fucking way.
Oh, man.
Well,
that sucks.
It's not the only way.
It's not the only way. You gotta listen.
But
yeah, like, the analog pocket's in right
that
there.
That is ridiculous, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with this, I hope this happens. This game was awesome, and I feel like it was, to call it slept on is incorrect. It was stranded. It was not given the support it needed. Mm-hmm. It was not like given the chance to succeed just because it was on the 3DS.
The first Strand game. Story number 8. The Callisto Protocol Season Pass includes new player death animations. This is Chris Scullion at Video Games Chronicle. The Callisto Protocol Season Pass will include extra death animations for protagonist Jacob and the enemies he faces. It's been confirmed. The details of the Season Pass were recently added to the game's Steam page, listing everything it offers, as well as typical content that would be expected with a Season Pass, such as a new story DLC, new areas, and a new mode. It also lists new death animations. The Contagion Bundle included in the Season Pass adds a new mode, as well as 13 new Jacob death animations. Meanwhile, the Riot Bundle adds a previously undiscovered area, as well as 12 new enemy death animations, end quote. While the addition of new player death animations as DLC would be considered unusual in most circumstances, it is notable in this case given how much of the Callisto Protocol's pre-release marketing has revolved around the gory ways Jacob can die. The game's first gameplay trailer in June 2022 was followed by a Schofield cut version of the trailer 1 week later, named after the game's creator Glenn Schofield, which was shown during Summer Game Fest 2022 and made a point of highlighting that it had extra gory death scenes in it. It's not clear yet how these DLC death scenes will be integrated into the game. Tim, is that enough to sell you on the season pass? some new death animations?
Dude, I mean, this is a perfect example of you need to be careful with your words and like how you put them out there. It's funny calling it a season pass. Like a game like this, why let's just call it DLC. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Why is a single player game like Callisto Protocol getting a season pass?
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that part of it.
A little bit weird, but whatever. Semantics, right? Does that actually matter? No.
Mm-hmm.
This new death animation thing, it just doesn't sound good. This is just not good marketing. This is bad marketing. This headline makes it sound really stupid. The new death animations, don't mention them. Don't talk about them before the game comes out.
Yeah.
That's just not a good look at all. Let the game come out, and then if the DLC, season pass, whatever the hell you want to call it, has new death animations, cool. That's great. This makes it feel like the game's not finished. And have we not learned our lesson at this point?
Yeah, I think it's a weird thing to market before the game, right? I think this goes back to how we thought about DLC in the early days of DLC, where so many people were like, oh, you're giving me the unfinished version of the game to some of the finished version of the game later on. I think we've kind of moved past that as the years have gone. We've kind of gained a better understanding of, one, as a user base, what DLC is, and then also developers understanding what makes good DLC. I think this would be fine if it was, oh yeah, 6 months after the game, we've been working on like the death animations. Now here they are, and you can buy them in the DLC. Like, I think that wouldn't be as much of a like, oh, that's not a weird thing.
Yeah, no.
I think having Sackboy
getting a Callisto Protocol dude.
Yeah, like
outfit.
But like having it be before the game's even out, being like, yeah, if you want to buy the season pass, you get 13 new death animations. I think it's the fact that death animations are not a thing that I don't know if you've ever seen that as a pack-in, like a DLC pack-in thing. And so it immediately strikes me as weird, right?
Yeah.
And it immediately strikes me as like, oh, what does that look like? It could be fine in the implementation at the end of the day. But I think from a marketing perspective, I don't think that's a thing you want to put the cart before the horse in that one.
It sounds so bad. I mean, that's the thing. It's like whether or not this ends up being totally fine and innocuous and not an issue at all, the sentence of this big single-player game that people are excited for has a season pass that gives you new death animations.
Yeah,
there's
that's
no
not a great
good
one.
There.
That's not,
there's
a,
no
that's not
good
a good
there.
One for the box. Here's what I'll say. All right. God of War Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
One of my very few critiques with that game
mm-hmm.
is the death animation. Because Kratos, it's the same one from God of War 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Kratos basically just like, you know, stiffens up and falls backwards.
Mm-hmm.
If they added in some new death animations to God of War, I could be all about it. All right? Let Kratos do like a twirl
but
as he's falling down.
For free.
For free.
Right.
I might pay for it, if I'm being honest. I really didn't like the stiffle. Sony
Bro,
Santa Monica,
you
want to make some more money?
You ain't paying for fucking death animations. You're not going back to play the game.
Oh, I have a lot of side quests left. Listen,
yeah.
Sony Santa Monica, you want me to
you
put your
be
game
dying,
back up
though.
Again?
You're too good.
No, I'd be dying a lot. I'd be dying a lot, all right? Sony Santa Monica, you want me to play more of your game? And also, you want some more money from me.
Oh, damn.
Give me 13 new death
13.
Animations. I want a death animation where, I don't know, like, I want Kratos to do, like, the Hail Mary. Like, do that before he fucking lands.
Holy shit.
I want funny shit.
Wow.
All right? I want Kratos to get cut in half.
Hey, guys.
I want
Mortal
Kombat
give me the
death
one.
Animations.
Don't let Blessing make video games. Just don't do it.
All right. Sony Santa Monica, you want some money? I got you. All right. I got you.
Hey, Sony Santa Monica, you want some money? What was story number one?
Don't worry about story number one. All right. I want Kratos to be sliced. I want it to be Mortal Kombat. Give me just all the different. Let enemy freeze me to death, right? And then rip Kratos' arm off and then beat him with his own arm.
Okay. Like Transformers 2, Revenge of the Fallen, where Optimus Prime slices off Starscream's arm and slaps him with it. It's fucking awesome.
Damn, I did not know that happened in Transformers 2. I was thinking more Sub-Zero. That's fucking wild. Story number 9, our final news story. Anoma Games are shutting down. This is from at Studio Anoma on Twitter. They tweeted out a statement saying, Arena Battle Champions, Deus Ex Go, Hitman Sniper, The Shadows and Space Invaders, Hidden Heroes will be shutting down on January 4th. The games will be removed from the App Store and Google Play Store on December 1st, and current players will not be able to access the games past January 4th. Effective immediately, in-game purchases are stopped. We encourage prior in-game purchases to be used before January 4th, as they will not be refunded. On behalf of the development team, we would like to thank you for playing our games.
Damn, man.
It's a sad way to go.
It really is. So unfortunate. I wonder about the other games, though, like Lara Croft Go and... what was the other
Go?
Hitman Go. Were so good. So damn good. But yeah, definitely, this is so sad, and this sucks. And, like, they were just rebranded, like, 3 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
Like, we just announced Anoma, and it said exactly how it is spelled. But yeah, this sucks.
It really does suck. Tim, I'm very curious to see what else happens over there at the Embracer Group. But... Mm-hmm. Updates on that might be so far away.
Maybe.
If I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Grop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Imagine if, like... Thank you for the smoke. Imagine if the Tomb Raider games had new death animations. I'd pay for that shit. Because, like, the Tomb Raider death animations for the modern Tomb Raider games, I don't know if you remember, that shit was graphic.
It was ridiculous.
They were beating the hell out of Lara Croft in that game.
Mm-hmm.
If they hit me with new death animations that, like, I don't know, like, she gets impaled, but, like, fucking, like, glitter spurts out or some shit.
Can I go home? I just want to leave. I don't want to be here.
Embracer Group, are you trying to make some money? You trying to make some money, Embracer Group. Yeah, my DMs are open.
Let me bring you the story now.
Follow me on Hive, Embracer Group, at Blessing Jr. on Hive. I got you, all right? Out today, we got God Beast Mark II for PC, Jelly Brawl for Xbox One, Tri-Fox for PS5, PS4. It's the prequel to Spy Fox. And then together, Project Indigo's Chapter 1.
No, hold on, PC. Don't you need to tell the people what you just read.
What, Tri-Fox? Oh, together.
It's together. TWOGETHER.
That together. Is a wild way to... That's a wild title.
Good for you.
Together.
Good for you.
Good for you. We got no new dates for you. We do have a deal of the day, though. Bayonetta 3 for Switch is $44.99 on Amazon.
Bless, real quick before we move on from what together. Chloe, Echo Chloe, on Twitter tweeted out a banger tweet a couple days ago that made me laugh very hard, where she's like, if Twitter dies... We need to call the next one Tutor.
Okay.
Or Tutor.
Okay.
Makes me real happy. You want to make some money, guys? Tutor. Hire Chloe. She'll figure it out.
DMs are open on Hive. I don't think you can DM people on Hive. I've tried. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write it as to what we got wrong as we got it wrong, so you can correct it for those watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and listening later on podcast services around the globe. Somebody's writing in here with kind of feudy suggestions. There are other places for that. Kind of funny.com says KFGD. You can go to write in with your questions and stuff. You can put that stuff in there. Editorializing. And then somebody's telling me how to use my uvula.
Ew.
And listen, we're not on that level. You gotta level up your social link with me before you can tell me how to use my uvula.
Oh my god.
It's Friday. Nerd. It's Wednesday Friday. It's Wednesday Friday.
That's great.
Next week's hosts for Kinda Funny Games Daily go like this. On Monday, you're getting Greg and Tim. Tuesday, you're getting Greg and me. Wednesday, you're getting me and Greg. Thursday, you're getting me and Tim. And on Friday, you're getting Tim and me. That's right. We're back at it like a bad habit. If you're watching this live, right after this, you're getting some Pokemon with Mike and Andy. If you want to catch that stream later, you can, of course, subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each new week, the live right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. Until next time, happy Thanksgiving.